Welcome to Stack Trace, the podcast that is all about life and technology from two developers' perspectives. And those two developers are, like always, me, John Sandel, and my good friend, Mr. Guy Rambo. How's it going, Mr. Rambo?
I'm doing great, John. I wonder if at some point people will think, like, you always say, as always, and it's me. Imagine if at some point it's someone else. That would be a surprise.
That would be a really big surprise. I mean, we have talked about that, like at some point, maybe if one of us needs to take a vacation or do something else, or, you know, maybe just to bring on someone just for fun. I mean, we did bring on guests from time to time, like in the past, but to do like a guest host or something like that, that could be fun to experiment with in the future.
Guest host? Ghost?
Something like that. So Rambo, there was an Apple event last week. I don't know if you heard.
There was? Oh, I forgot to watch it.
So we thought, of course, that we would talk about the Apple event on this episode. We kind of have to, right? Or we want to. Like, it's exciting to talk about the announcements and, of course, also to reveal our poker scores. But I think what we can do today is to not just go through the entire event, like, you know, announcement by announcement, but rather just pick a few announcements that we were particularly excited about, where we think that we can, like, share the most interesting thoughts, or what do you think?
Yeah, I think that sounds good.
Great. So before we get into that then, let's talk about the poker game. So if you missed the episode that we did 2 weeks ago, then we played poker, like we usually do before an Apple event, around what we think that Apple might announce and what the show will contain in general. And I must say that I think we did a new high score this time.
Ooh,
we
nice.
Did really well. The summing up the scores, I don't think I have seen this large amount of points before.
Nice. Yeah, I think we got a record, and it wasn't a negative record.
Thankfully, that did happen once. We did get like minus 20 or something, but thankfully this was not one of those events and one of those games. So let's start with me. So I scored a total of 34 points, which again, I think it might be my personal best. And it's not negative minus 34, it's plus 34.
Yeah, that's what would be the max? Would be like 50 or something?
The maximum? Exactly. Yeah. So if you would bet maximum like 5 on everything and you would get all of those, that would be 50 points.
Nice.
So that's the maximum. So 34, not bad.
Not bad.
Especially considering, like, I don't feel like we played it safe. Like, of course, we made some safe bets that were based on, you know, rumors that have been out there for a while that people were quite confident that this will happen during the event. But we also did, I mean, I did pick USB-C on the iPhone, which didn't happen, which is why I lost some of those points. But still, I'm very happy with that score, I must say.
Yeah, I'm happy for you because you've been on the negative side quite a few times. So it's nice to see that you did great. But I'm wondering how things went for me.
So you got 41 points.
Woo!
So an even higher high score. So congrats, Rambo. You win again.
Yay.
You are the everlasting winner of this game, it seems like. Which, to be fair, I am completely fine with. I'm happy for you to win. And I'm going to keep challenging you. And I'm going to win one day. I mean, I have won a few times. But I will win again one day in the future. But until then, I just say big congrats for winning the game. You did extremely well. 41 points is a great score.
Awesome. Yeah, I think in general also, even though we didn't really play safe in most circumstances, there was a lot of info out there about what might happen. And also we tended to go higher on our bets this time. So perhaps we actually went a bit more risky than usual. But yeah, we did have a lot of hints. And following Apple for as long as we've been following Apple, you kind of get a sense of what makes sense and what doesn't during like the rumor season. So I think it makes sense that we did fairly well considering we had a lot of hints from the rumor mill.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's very interesting looking at this event in particular. Like, I feel like there was a lot of things announced at this event that have been rumored for a long time. For example, the Apple Watch Ultra.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that has been known by so many different names in the rumors for so many years, it feels like. Like, there was the, you know, Apple Watch Rugged or the Apple Watch Pro, perhaps. Or, you know, one Apple Watch that can withstand a little bit more, like, weather and different usage in more extreme conditions. And what we got was the Apple Watch Ultra, which fits all those rumors that have happened over a long period of time. But it also feels like there were so many surprises with that announcement in particular. And like, it's one of those things where the rumors might just get like the headline story, right? Like an Apple Watch that can withstand more wear and tear.
Yeah.
But what we got, like the actual product, it had just so many things in it and so many things that were really surprising, I feel like.
Yeah, and I think what tends to leak and therefore result in more realistic information from rumor sources and people who write about and report about Apple is hardware related. And it's usually parts, so like a display or a CAD of what the case will look like. But Apple, and I think this event had a lot of that, is very much into integrating hardware and software in a way where the software kind of defines the experience in a way that just knowing about the different hardware pieces doesn't really tell you the whole story.
Absolutely. And I feel like that's becoming more and more true the more kind of mature these different product lines become.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at, for example, the Apple Watch, we're up now to the Series 8. And we also got like the iPhone 14 series, right?
Yeah.
Like these are products that have been around now for a while. And in the early days, like a lot of the innovations happened based on like just pure hardware features. Like the screens got bigger, the screens got more higher resolution, and so on and so forth. And of course, there are a lot of hardware aspects here as well. I mean, these are brand new devices after all. But to your point, like I feel like so much of it happens at that intersection of hardware and software like Apple likes to talk about. And I feel like that's really true in the case of this event, and also like just pure software features that you usually don't leak and that look really, really interesting when we look at them.
Yeah, so how about we start by talking about the Apple Watch Ultra? And I think we started talking about the name, so how do you feel about that name? I have some feelings about it.
So it seems like Ultra is becoming a thing now, right? Like first there was the M1 Ultra, and now we have the Apple Watch Ultra. And it's sort of like, it feels like Apple is using it as a name that is like better than best, right? It's like Ultra. That's the best. It's even better than Max Rambo. That's how Ultra is. And I feel like it's kind of a fitting name for the product that they showed us. Like, I was very impressed with what I saw, and I was even texting you during the presentation that I'm even like tempted to buy this, even though I don't do any of the activities that they were like showing as kind of key use cases for it. Like, I have been diving a few times in the past, but I'm not really a diver. I enjoy casual hiking, but I am not like this extreme hiking where you need a satellite and stuff like that. Like, I usually just go hiking like in a nearby park where I'm always, you know, close to the city. And of course, I like to do some sports for exercise, but I'm not like running in the desert or so, stuff like that. So it definitely isn't a product kind of for me, it doesn't feel like, but just the technology and everything like baked into it, and just how Ultra it actually looks, like how far they went with these features and this design and everything. Like, I feel like if it was one product that really kind of the name Ultra fits, it's this one.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like the way they use the same adjective, I guess, for different things kind of makes the whole thing a bit confusing. But I do agree with your assessment as well. So I guess I'm in the wrong here for expecting Apple's product naming to be like consistent, because it's never been, it probably never will be. And the better than best thing really highlights how Apple likes to view things, because like I think famously when you go to export a PDF in macOS, the options are good, better, and best for quality. Like, there's no low
exactly
quality option. So I guess it would be weird to, like, it's not like they would have the Apple Watch meh, and then the Apple Watch okay, and then the Apple Watch wow, or something.
Exactly. And it's interesting, because if you look at the iPhone lineup then, so the best iPhone, or I mean, it depends on how you define best, but the most expensive one, let's just say, and the one that has like the most features, if you look at the like spec sheet and so on, is the iPhone 14 Pro Max. So why isn't that called the iPhone 14 Ultra? And if I could guess what they were thinking in the writer's room of the Apple marketing department there, where they, you know, wrote all these names down on a whiteboard, probably, I'm thinking that perhaps like they don't view it as a separate product, right? Like the iPhone 14 Pro Max is just a maxed out version of the 14 Pro. So they're still fundamentally the same product, the Pro and the Pro Max, but the Max just has more, right? Just bigger. That's the Max where it comes from. But the Apple Watch Ultra, I feel like, is really positioned as a completely different product than the standard Apple Watch.
Yeah, when they changed the bigger iPhone to be called Max instead of Plus, the reasoning we thought about was like, oh, now the only difference is that the screen is larger. That was the only difference. But they've already like broken that, basically. But I guess it's what I mentioned about the way I think about these names. It's just marketing, right? So it doesn't have to make sense. It just has to sound cool and convey like whatever the person who's buying the product wants it to mean to them, I guess. If I were to guess a difference between the meaning of Ultra and Max in this situation, I think Ultra is talking more about the person who's going to be using the watch rather than the watch itself necessarily. So if you're into like ultra sports, or that's why I think it should be called like the Extreme or something, because it's for like extreme athletes. But yeah, and then like the Pro, you get like the sense that it's more geared towards people who want the Pro experience, whatever that means. And now Plus is back again. So I guess at the end of the day, it's just names. It's just marketing. So we don't have to read too much into it.
No, I guess not. But it's really interesting, like that actual segment of the presentation. I feel like you can kind of always tell when Apple themselves feel like they have something really special to announce. Where if you go back to the original iPhone keynote with Steve Jobs, like, that was very clear that when he walked on stage and he started that part of the presentation, unveiling the first iPhone, it was very clear that he knew that, okay, I have something special to show you, right? Like, yeah, that was that atmosphere in the room, even though I wasn't there, but you can kind of tell it from the video. And I feel like when they also announced the M1 chip, like, what was it, like 2 years ago at this point?
Yeah.
Like, that was the same feeling. Like, they knew that they just had something that was incredible. And I feel like it was the same feeling here with the Apple Watch Ultra, even though perhaps it's not as revolutionary, if you will, as either the iPhone or the M1 chip. But still, like, they really, I feel like, went all out on, like, implementing so many different features for all these use cases that it was really impressive, I feel like. And again, I was very impressed and felt like I want to get one, even though I have no use for it. So, you know, mission accomplished with the marketing, right? And it just, like, the whole kind of segment there of that presentation really, like, I feel like showed so much confidence and showed so much enthusiasm for this product.
Yeah, I really liked the presentation. And it's not for me, like you mentioned, and not for you. And I feel like this is the first time in a while where Apple announces a product and it's like the top of the line, and I don't feel like this is me that they're targeting, because of course I'm not an athlete. I'm very, like, I do very basic stuff to try to keep healthy, but that's where it stops, basically. So even though I think it's really cool, there's like absolutely no reason that I would have to be getting this watch. And not even like, oh, it's cool, because it doesn't look like something I would want to wear in most situations where I'm wearing an Apple Watch. It's a bit like big for my wrists, and I don't feel like it's like a fashion product like the rest of the lineup.
It's definitely a different kind of fashion statement, right?
Yeah.
When you wear that on your wrist, especially if you're wearing it with a shirt or something, right? Like, it's it doesn't really look as one of those like dress up kind of watches, even though the Apple Watch is maybe a little bit more neutral in a way. Like, you can wear it in many different kinds of situations, but this one definitely feels like it screams, like, the design screams like practicality. And that's, I think, also why I find it so interesting, where, you know, we talked about it when Apple announced the latest round of MacBook Pros, that the design kind of went backwards in some ways when it comes to pure aesthetics, and went to a more kind of practical design, more like a little bit more bulky, just to kind of fit more things in there, and, you know, more ports, like, even though maybe that doesn't look as quote-unquote elegant and so on, right? And
yeah,
I feel like here you have the same thing. Like, you have something that is clearly, like, super well-designed, it looks really nice, but also, like, it just looks so practical. Like, nothing kind of more shows that, I feel like, than this action button, like this big orange button on the side, and you can just press it for quick actions for different kinds of activities. And this is, again, where I feel like it's a very interesting thing that they built, where they've taken these very specific use cases, like let's take diving as an example, and they've basically made the Apple Watch a diving computer where the action button has a very specific function, and they've really kind of thought about how can you actually use this device without interacting with it like you would with a normal Apple Watch, where you will swipe and interact with it with your finger. You can't really do that when you're out diving, right?
Yeah.
So again, very interesting just from a kind of use case and technology perspective, how they kind of combine those things and really designed the product, it seems like, to solve some very specific problems.
Yeah, and also the way they had to think about software when working on this product, because like you mentioned, it's going to be used underwater and in very extreme circumstances. So it's not like you can have very dense UI where the person has to hit this particular spot to go into a different mode or something. It has to be very well thought out and practical, like you mentioned. And I really like what they've done with the action button, where at first I thought, so you watch the keynotes, and when they show the action button, there's that, like this really cute animation where it kind of looks like the button is going into the screen of the Apple Watch, and then it kind of transforms to show you what it's doing. And I thought that they had done that just like as a demonstration for the keynote, but it's actually how it works in real life. And not only does that look cool, but it also gives very clear feedback to the user about what's going on. So when you press the action button, the whole screen lights up and shows in big text what it's currently going to do. And I think that's not only good looking, but also very helpful in situations where you have to get this feedback very clearly.
Exactly. And I feel like that's kind of where the best design happens, is when you have something really clear and practical that you want to solve for, and you create a design that really solves those problems. It kind of checks all the checkboxes, right?
Yeah.
But then you also make it look pretty and you make it animate nicely. And that's kind of all just niceness on the top. And to your point, it's not just that it looks nice and that it's like an animation for the sake of animation, but it conveys an action, it conveys some feedback. And again, I feel like that's kind of where design really shines the best. Like when you can design something that I feel like is like an example of some really, really stellar design work, is when you can provide that kind of practical feedback while also making something look pretty.
Yeah, definitely. And as to how this is going to be received by the target market for it, I guess time will tell. But I've heard some people who are into these more extreme use cases who mentioned, and that's like the classic thing that people say when Apple comes up with something, oh, but this other brand has this thing that does this and it's been doing this for 10 years, so why is this a big deal? And I guess it's a big deal if you are into Apple products and Apple previously didn't offer something for you. So there are probably people out there who have an Apple Watch and use an Apple Watch, but when they go do whatever extreme sports that they do, they can't use the Apple Watch, and that bothers them. So now there's an Apple Watch for them as well. And I think that's great.
Yeah, exactly. And it's also a sign of Apple Watch like becoming such a mainstream product, like in of itself, that it can now branch out to these more specific devices, right?
Yeah.
Where this is a device that is like built specifically for a certain group of people. And to your earlier point, like even if you're super into Apple products, many people will look at this and say, well, this is not for me, right? Or someone like me will look at it and say, this is super cool. I wish I was into this, but I'm not, right? And you know, that's just a sign of, I think, of the product line, like being again mature, and also like just the amount of Apple Watch that they're selling and kind of how mainstream it has actually become and how popular it has become, that they can now create these more specific devices. But it is going to be very interesting to see what's the future of this device. Like, is this going to get an Apple Watch Ultra 2 in a few years? Is this going to get a spec bump when there's a new chip available? Because that's a kind of inherent problem, I feel like, with these smartwatches, is that you buy this watch, which is expensive, and then a few years later, it might range from poor user experience to almost useless because of the battery and the software updates and so on. Like, it's not like when you get like an old school kind of mechanical wash or something that can last a lifetime. It's something that is going to last for a very limited amount of time in the grand scheme of things. So it's going to be interesting to see, how are they going to follow this up? Are they going to actually maintain this product? Is it going to be successful enough that they're going to create a second version or spec bump it once there's a new chip available and so on? That's going to be interesting to see.
Yeah, the thing is, and there are people in my life that know that I am into Apple stuff and they know that I work with this stuff, and they are always asking, like, why do they have to release a new iPhone every year? Like, I change my iPhone every 2, 3, 4, 5 years. So, and they come up with a new iPhone every single year. It doesn't make sense. Nothing changes. Like, there are all of these memes where it's pretty much like always the same thing. And the answer is Wall Street. Like, there's no other reason. Like, I totally agree. I feel like the Apple Watch is something they could probably release a new version every 3 years if we were talking about waiting to have like a significant enough update to warrant it. So that could be the case maybe for the Ultra, since it's not like the main product in the lineup. But again, like, even considering that they don't have to update every device every year, which I definitely agree with, it doesn't change anything for the people who don't want to upgrade every year. Like, if you upgrade every 3 years, it doesn't matter that Apple released the other devices in the meantime. Like, I guess it even gives you more options if you maybe want to save some money and get like last year's model instead. So it doesn't really bother me, and I don't think it should bother people who upgrades every other year or every 3 years. Like, to you, it's the same. It's just like if they hadn't updated it. Again, we come back to the point where you're not required to buy every version of every Apple product.
Well, I think that is really kind of the point, right? Yeah. That's the source of frustration for a lot of people. Maybe not everyone, but I think a big part of it is just this fear of missing out, right? Yeah. It's like the classic joke that we used to make in like the 90s and so on. Like, when someone would buy a new computer, we would say, you know, when you brought it home from the store and you plugged it in, a new computer was already released. You know, yeah. that's already more modern than the one you just bought. And it felt like that for a while, like in the 90s and early 2000s, like computers were getting so much faster, so quicker. So it was like, it felt like almost every single week or month, there was a new computer that was like way faster than the older one.
Yeah.
And of course, that sucks, right? When you buy something and you spend a lot of money on it, and then a couple of months or maybe a year later, like, it feels like it's outdated because there's a new one. So I think that's a big part of the frustration. But I completely agree with you. Like, I'm a very big like technology enthusiast. I'm a programmer. I buy test devices sometimes for testing, but my own personal iPhone, like, I upgrade it like every three, four years at this point. And I don't have any fear of missing out, actually. Like, I think it's cool when you get a new device. And of course, like, getting a new camera and so on, like, has some really good practical value that you can take better photos. But for example, the dynamic island and things we're going to talk about later, it's cool. Like, I'm very happy Apple is continuing to innovate. And to your point, like, just because I'm not getting it doesn't mean I'm not happy that it exists. Like, it's great that they keep innovating and moving the things forward, but it doesn't mean that just because there's a new kind of dynamic island on the phone that I'm going to throw away my 13 Pro that I bought last year and get a new one. Like, I'm not the kind of person who does that. And again, I'm not judging anyone who does that. Like, if you want to get a new iPhone every year, go ahead. I mean, I'm not judging anybody. It's just how I prefer to do things. Like, I get a new one once I feel like it's a significant enough upgrade that it kind of warrants the purchase for me. But that's just me. Like, I think everyone can just do however they want. But I guess what I'm trying to say here is just like, try to, if you're feeling this fear of missing out, like, it's perhaps worth trying to not focus too much on that, because yeah, there's always going to be a new iPhone the next year.
Yeah, it's a whole like fashion thing, even like what's currently in fashion and colors and things like that, which, by the way, I did buy the purple iPhone 14 Pro because it's the new color, so I must get the new color, John. Otherwise, how will people know that I have the latest iPhone?
Of course.
People must know. But I'm curious, like, didn't having a newborn change your perspective a little bit because of, like, the camera situation? Because not that, like, oh, I'm going to take better pictures now with more megapixels, or they're gonna look better so that I can show them to other people, but the archival aspects, because I always think about, and of course it's very different nowadays, but I always think about like the people who got the first digital cameras and they had like a newborn or small children at the time, and all of their family pictures now look like this postage stamp sized thing, grainy and all that. Of course, it's not like that anymore, but don't you have like that feeling that you should like be taking the best pictures possible to have for the future?
Well, I think kind of you answered your own question there. So when people, like back in the day, like for example, when your parents took pictures of you, like if someone would show you those pictures, your first thought wouldn't be, oh, it looks outdated. It would be like, oh, this is so nice. Like this is, you know, nice memorabilia, is nice that it exists and it's a nice memory, right?
But it was taken on film. Film is better.
Exactly. Yeah. Same for me, right? Like we're really dating ourselves here. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was born way before digital cameras, way before iPhones, that's for sure. So absolutely, I'm thinking about that. I definitely want to have as good photos of my son as possible. But at the same time, like, is me buying like the new iPhone every single year going to give me enough, like an upgrade in the camera department? Maybe, but I think doing it every second year or third year will be definitely good enough. And I mean, the iPhone's cameras are already so good that it's not like I'm taking pictures with my 1 year old phone today and I'm looking at the pictures and I'm like, oh, this is terrible. Like the photos look amazing, right? So, and of course, maybe they won't age like in 10 years or 20 years from now. We'll look back on these pictures and think, whoa, that's really low resolution. I can't believe it's not a holographic display where I can step into the photo and be immersed in it in 3D. But I think that will be true even if I upgrade to the next year's iPhone every year. I think technology marches on so quickly that I don't think, again, you don't need to be stressed about getting a new iPhone every year unless you really want to, because the iPhone you still have is, if you got it last year, is not trash, right? It's still a very, very good phone.
Yeah, I agree. And I asked because I think there might be listeners who are in a similar situation who might be thinking about that stuff. But I totally agree with you. And even going like to an extreme case, if I look today at pictures I've taken with my iPhone 3G back in the day, which was the first iPhone I owned, they look fine. Like you mentioned, I'm not looking at them for the quality or like I want to print an outdoor sized version of them or something. Like I look at them for memory, and the memory is there, and it's more than enough quality for me to remember and to like feel nice about the memory and feel nostalgic or something. So yeah, I agree. Like pictures taken for the purposes of memory and archival, like the first iPhone probably would be okay by today's standards.
Well, maybe that's a little bit of an extreme example, but I
it
feel
is,
like that.
Yeah, but for memory, it's fine. Like,
yeah, absolutely, yeah. For memory. But I feel like there have been some really significant big leaps. And, you know, me, for example, going from the iPhone 10 to the iPhone 13 Pro last year, that was a huge leap. And one of the biggest things that I've been appreciating over the last year has been the night mode feature,
yeah.
Where so many times when I'm like, I like to keep the apartment a little bit like, not dark, but not like have super bright lights on in the evening, especially not during the winter, which we're heading into right now here, heading into fall and then winter. It's going to get pretty dark here where I live, and having like the apartment be a little bit more like have more mood lighting, if you will. Like I like that. But that also meant before that taking the photos with my iPhone 10, like it didn't look that great. But now with the 13 Pro, like the night mode is just really, really good. And that has really kind of made me take more photos just around the house and, you know, of my dog and of different food that I made and so on. And it still looks really great, even if the lighting isn't, you know, super bright. And so that has been a really great leap and something that I'm actually getting a lot of benefit from. So I think like, you know, in a couple of years, I will definitely upgrade my phone again and I will get a similar kind of leap in photography quality for some other maybe different situation.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Like low light was the biggest leap we've had more recently, and I definitely notice it.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's our Apple Watch Ultra segment talking about the iPhone camera. But I guess it was a good discussion because it's a really big thing that I think a lot of people discuss and ask themselves when they watch an Apple event, especially if our listeners are like us, fans of the company, right? And they're excited about these products and you're always thinking, should I get this one? Shouldn't I get this one? Which one should I get? I don't know. And I guess hopefully it's interesting to hear us talk about these kind of discussions that we have with ourselves and together out here in the public, because, well, it's definitely something I think a lot of people are considering at every Apple event.
Definitely.
But now let's talk about a product that I did actually buy, because I do enjoy buying new Apple products when they give me some really good value. And I think I mentioned it before, and that's that I am always very keen on new AirPods. And that's because I use them all the time. I use them, of course, for audio production and so on, of course, as well. Like, having good AirPods is really nice when you're editing podcasts and so on, and also just during work. And the AirPods Pro for me was a really fantastic product when it came out. So when they showed the AirPods Pro second generation, Rambo, I had my credit card in my hand. I was ready to buy it.
You were throwing your credit card at the screen, waiting for something to happen.
Yeah, they haven't invented that technology yet. They should do that. Like, when there's an Apple event, they can, you can Apple Pay on the screen.
Yeah, I would definitely do that. And then, of course, AirPods are near and dear to my heart as well. And this has been, I think, one of the few times where they got screen time during an Apple event. They have refreshed AirPods in the past a lot without having them appear in an event. So it's nice to see the AirPods getting really nice coverage during an Apple event. And I would say these AirPods Pro second generation and the iPhone 14 Pro were my favorite announcements. Probably my favorite one was the AirPods Pro, because it's so important to my work currently, and I can't wait to get them. Of course, I bought them. I bought two pairs, actually, one engraved and one not engraved, and that's for reasons we can talk about in a bit. But what about it makes you excited the most? Like, what are you looking for in the new model?
I think, honestly, like, the feature that I was the most excited about from the event was the adaptive transparency.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like that solves such a common problem. Like, for example, what I will usually do, so a little bit behind the scenes of this podcast, is that you edit the show, Rambo, and then I listen to it after you've edited it to make sure that it all sounds good, that the audio levels are good, that I didn't laugh too loud at a particular segment and so on. And judging like audio levels and so on is always a little bit tricky if you're outside. And I like to listen to podcasts when I'm outside walking with my dog. And before, I'm always using transparency mode when I'm out walking, because it feels, using noise cancellation when you're out walking feels a little bit dangerous. Like, if you're walking in traffic, of course, if you're in the middle of a forest, but then you probably don't need noise cancellation, right? Unless the birds are really loud in that forest.
Yeah.
So I use transparency mode. And one of the challenges then has been, you know, when I walk past like a construction site, which was exactly what they showed in the video, it gets really hard to hear. And then I usually have to rewind and then listen again, because I want to make sure that I get everything when I'm listening to a podcast that we're about to release, to make sure I just, if there are any mistakes, if there was anything that we didn't catch during the edit, that we can fix it in a second edit phase, right?
Mm-hmm.
And having done adaptive transparency for me, I think is going to be really great, because that means that, in theory, I mean, I haven't used them yet, but hopefully that will mean that the actual perceived level of a volume that I will hear out walking will be the same. But then if there will be a loud noise or something, the noise cancellation will kind of temporarily kick in to make sure I can still hear what is being played. And I feel like that's just going to make the experience of kind of listening to a podcast when I'm out walking really smooth, especially when I'm kind of doing QA work for a podcast that I'm either editing myself or one that you've edited.
Yeah, something I have noticed that we talked about a lot in a podcast I do in Portuguese, and a lot of listeners confirm the same thing, and other hosts as well. And I've never been able to actually like confirm it with anyone from Apple or anyone who would know, but I feel like the noise cancellation mode on AirPods Pro, like the current generation ones, and other Apple and Beats headsets, like I've had it with the Beats Fit Pro as well, which I use quite a bit. I feel like it has like a safety feature where, depending on the frequency, duration, and loudness of a particular sound, it will sometimes feel like it's almost like engaging transparency modes temporarily, sometimes in only one of the buds. Because I've had it here where if the phone would ring on the apartment, and like I had like my right side facing where the phone is, and it would be really loud, I was listening to something and then I could clearly notice the ambient sounds increasing in my right side in the AirPods. So I almost feel like this is kind of the opposite, right? But I've never been able to confirm that this is like a safety feature or something. Like, let's say you're walking with noise cancellation and like there's a horn or something that you should be aware of. And it kind of like engages transparency for a bit to let you know. Or maybe, I don't know, like this came up after a firmware update. So maybe they were kind of testing like the adaptive transparency thing or something. So I'm really curious if anyone who's listening has any information about this. You can send us an anonymous email or something to let us know. But yeah, I'm really curious about that. But yeah, I really like the idea of adaptive transparency. And it makes sense, right? You're using transparency mode and the headset has the capability of adaptively and like targeting specific types of noises and like feeding your ears with the opposite to lower it down. So it makes sense that they can do that for a particular set of frequencies or loudnesses, but not others. So like you mentioned the case of the construction site or something like that. So yeah, really interesting and really curious to see how that will work in practice. But I'm also really excited about two other things. Well, I'm excited about the whole thing, but there are two other things that I think are really interesting. One of them is twice as much noise cancellation, according to Apple. Like, what would that sound like? Because the noise cancellation on the current generation AirPods Pro is already really good. So twice that?
Rambo, I know what it's going to sound like.
Nothing.
It's going to sound like nothing.
Yeah, that makes sense. And also the fact that now the charging case is more of a computer than it was before. And it actually has a radio in it. So I'm curious to see, other than Find My, if they're going to also use that for something else in the future or whatever. But it's got me really curious to see what the implementation looks like.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think personalized spatial audio, or like, I don't know if that's actually what they called it, but spatial audio plus like personalization, like being able to adapt again, like that feels like kind of a keyword here, like adapt the spatial audio and the kind of listening experience to each person's ear. Like that also sounds really cool. And I can't wait to hear what that actually sounds like when you listen to music or podcasts or anything else, really.
I have three things to say about personalized spatial audio. First, it's not a feature of the second generation AirPods Pro. It's a feature of iOS 16. So
Right.
It's one of those things like we didn't have enough bullet points. So let's like throw this into the AirPods Pro presentation. They love like recapping stuff. Like the Apple Watch, like the non-Ultra Apple Watch segment was pretty much like all recapping stuff that the Apple Watch has done since forever and watchOS 8 features. So yeah, with AirPods Pro, that's what they threw in there to like make the presentation more interesting. So personalized spatial audio, if you're listening out there, you have the current AirPods Pro or Beats Fit Pro, the AirPods Max, you can use personalized spatial audio with the third generation AirPods, the regular AirPods as well. The second thing is it's really hard to set up, like really hard. It took me several attempts to be able to make it work because you have to scan your ears with the front-facing true depth camera on your iPhone. So you can't be looking at the screen. So you don't know if you're doing it right. And they have haptic feedback and stuff like that, but it took me a long time to figure it out. And if you have like a strand of hair over your ear, it doesn't work. So it's really fiddly to set up. So if you want to set that up, like take some time, like reserve a slot in your schedule to do it, because it will take a few attempts and it's going to be a little bit irritating. And the third thing is that once you've managed to set it up, it's really good. Like it does really make a difference. Spatial audio, especially for music, I would say, and spatialized stereo, when you turn it on, sometimes it just sounds like the sound is coming from further away than within the headphones. And that doesn't necessarily sound good. And it feels like after I've done the personalized spatial audio thing, it doesn't sound like that anymore. It sounds like more full or something. It's hard to explain, but I would recommend trying it out because I've set it up on multiple headsets here. And it does feel to me like it sounds better after you've set it up.
Oh, interesting. It's kind of feels like it's the classic problem of when you have more dynamic range, like the lower end of that range will be lower than if you just have something more flat. Yeah. Like, for example, if you're watching a movie or something where the mastering is really dynamic, you can have very low volume in certain like dialogue or different kinds of sounds. And then when something explodes, if it's an action movie or something, it's super loud, right? Yeah. And that can be a problem if you, well, have a newborn baby who's trying to sleep in the next room. But in this case, it's fantastic because it's all in AirPods.
Yeah, definitely. So I do recommend trying it out. And if that's what sounds the most interesting to you, our listener, don't buy the AirPods Pro just because of that, because it's available in other headsets as well. But I think for most people who have the AirPods Pro, this is worth the upgrade, unless like you bought it last week or something, then I would say it's not needed. But yeah, after a year or so, the battery is not gonna be that great, which is unfortunate. So you're gonna want to have the new ones probably, and unless like you don't use them very much. But if you're like me or John, like I use AirPods pretty much all day, so I do need the battery to be in good shape.
Yeah, exactly. And if it's something that, you know, for me, if I use it all day, every day, like it's, again, it's definitely worth an upgrade, right? Because even if it's just marginally better and there are just some new nice features, and I could have gotten some of them on iOS 16, which I should upgrade to, I guess. Yeah. But then still, like it feels like it's definitely worth the upgrade for me with the AirPods Pro, this new generation. Even if the adaptive transparency just works half as good as advertised, it will still be a great upgrade for me with my podcast listening out on dog walks.
Definitely. So should we take a boat now and go to the dynamic island?
Let's do it.
My favorite place on earth right now.
So let's make the joke that everyone else has made on Twitter, which is, if you could just bring one thing to the dynamic island, what would it be, Rambo?
It would be the music app.
Ah, that's a good one. That's a good one. So isn't this really, really interesting? It's interesting from so many perspectives, like as a feature, but I feel like almost more interesting for us, like people who are actually working in the field and building UIs and things like that, is the fact that Apple took something that is, if you look at it on paper, it's a compromise in design to fit the reality of the devices, right? That they have to have some kind of hole punch out in the screen to have those sensors there, which is kind of, if you look at it on paper, a downside. But they took it and they designed it into a feature, a selling point, like the main selling point of the device. I mean, isn't that fascinating?
Yes, and it's even more fascinating when you realize that they've been doing it with the notch as well. And not in the same way, of course, because there's no like feature where the notch is used for something, but they embraced the notch. There was the whole discussion when the iPhone X was still a rumor and when like the images leaked, and I may or may not have had something to do with that. And when people were talking like, oh, will they hide it with a bar, like a black bar, or will they show it? And it's clear that Apple really embraced it and it became the iconic image of iPhone. And even though it didn't have any software features like this one, because it wasn't practical in that sense, it really is something that Apple wanted to show as being like a defining feature of iPhone. And they're doing the same now with the Dynamic Island, but like kicked up many notches, no pun intended. And it really was unintended. So
that was a great one, though.
So it's really fascinating. And when you think about it, it's something that I thought about. I was thinking about what bad thing can I think about this? Because I was so excited when they showed that. And people who listen to this show, they'll know that that's so, the sort of thing that I really like the really fluid animations and really fun and interactive and fluid. And it's just really nice the way they've done it. But I was thinking, like, what sort of problems can I find on it? And the first thing that came to mind was, what if this is, like, just a one-off? Or, like, if in 2 or 3 years, they don't need to have a dynamic island anymore because everything will be hidden behind the display.
It'll be the static water instead.
Yeah, but then I thought a bit more about this, and I feel like this is here to stay for a really long time, at least like the foreseeable future, because even if they don't need to have it, it's a nice enough thing where they can keep it, even if like the camera is hidden behind the screen and there's no need for a cutout there, they can still have it. And if that's the case, then it can be an even more dynamic island, because in that case, if you flip the phone around to landscape mode to watch a video in full screen, it can disappear completely. It doesn't have to stay there. So I feel like this is something they thought about a lot, and they are probably committed to keeping this in there for a fairly long time, even if they don't have to, for the same constraints that they have now.
Yeah, but I mean, even if they do come up with a way to completely hide all those sensors and cameras and everything underneath the screen, if you look at the current notch that was introduced with the iPhone X, and now, what are we, like 5 years later or something like that?
Yep.
There's still a notch on the new iPhone 14, just not the Pro, right?
Yep.
So the notch is still here and probably will be here maybe next year and maybe the year after, like all the phones have the dynamic island. But that's still like a span of 7 years, something like that. So if the dynamic island will be here for 7 more years, well, that's a good investment, right? Like, yeah, that's actually a really long time. And after that, maybe like the lower end devices will still have it. Maybe like the iPhone SE will have it and so on. So I feel like the way screen technology moves, and especially at the scale that iPhones are at, like the amount of iPhones they need to ship and so on, I feel like a new kind of shift in screen technology takes a really long time to come along.
Yeah, and another reason why I feel like that is, if there's nothing in the front of the iPhone, then what's the iconic representation of an iPhone?
It's
just a squircle. Like, so I feel like there has to be something to represent the iPhone. And I mean, perhaps it would be like the current icon for the modern iPads, where it's just the home indicator. It's a squircle with a little line at the bottom. Maybe it could be that, but I don't know. But that out of the way, what do you think about it? Like, in terms of the actual software implementation, and then how do you see yourself using it, or how do you feel like third-party apps could take advantage of it?
Yeah, it's super interesting because it basically gives us like a new surface to play around with when it comes to controls and so on, right? Yeah. Like, I haven't looked into the actual APIs for it yet.
Isn't one.
Right, exactly. That's why I haven't looked into it yet. That was going to be my next question. Has there even been any documentation, and doesn't seem like it. But once there is, I definitely want to play around with it to see what it can do for the different projects I work on. And even if there's no immediate way for me to use it in some of my freelance work, I will definitely play around with prototypes with it, like I like to do with new hardware features in general. Super cool, though, because many apps, they have some actions that you want to be able to access quickly, kind of globally, right? They're kind of the UI equivalent of a singleton, Rambo. Like, you want to be able to access them dot shared anywhere. And for a camera app, that might be like the shutter button, right? Or something like that. Or for, let's say, like a file uploading service, like you want to be able to just hit a button to upload a file at any point and so on. So it feels like there's a lot of controls like that, and placing those in that dynamic island could be really, really useful. But also in terms of like, you know, things like notifications. And one thing they showed in the event was the now playing bar can be in the dynamic island there, and then you can tap it to kind of bring up the playback controls. Like, things like that, like if you have a video playback app, or even something like a game, and maybe you have like your inventory of items and it's like hidden in the dynamic island and you tap it and boom, you get your items coming out of that. Like that's just a few small ideas, right? There are just so many things you could do with it, because like so far what we've been doing most of the time when we want those persisted controls is either like put it in a tab bar at the bottom of the screen, put it in the navigation bar as a navigation item, but that's usually contextual to the current screen you're at, right?
Yeah.
Or you could do like the Google thing, which is to put one of those big floating action buttons like at the bottom right corner of the screen, which I'm not a huge fan of. I feel like that obscures a lot of the kind of content of the view, right? But yeah. Having those kind of controls in something like the dynamic island, which kind of gets out of the way, I feel like could be a great solution for things like that.
Yeah, definitely. I'm not sure if your gaming example would be possible, because and this is something that people have probably tweeted at us by now because we said there's no API for it. But we know that it's going to be based on live activities, and that's the ActivityKit framework. And the ActivityKit framework is documented, but it's not in the release candidate version of iOS 16, because that's probably going to be released with 16.1. And or maybe even later, and so we will have to wait like for the Xcode 14.1 beta probably to be able to play around with it. But as far as we know, the ActivityKit framework will be used for the dynamic island stuff, and that's good because that means you can also implement something using live activities. And it's going to be taken advantage of in all devices, all iPhones, basically, not just the new 14 Pro. So even if it makes sense for something to be in the dynamic island, you might want to have it as a live activity in all devices so that people can use it as a live activity, even if it's not in the dynamic island because the device doesn't have one. So yeah. I think the main thing about it is that you have to leave the app, basically. So what kicks it off is the user leaving the app. So if the app activates a dynamic island activity, live activity, it's so many words, John, I'm confused. So if the app runs a live activity and sets it up in a way where it's allowed to be in the dynamic island, when the user swipes up to go to the home screen, instead of the app flying into its own icon, it flies into the dynamic island and becomes the live activity. And that's how it works, basically. So with the music app, you're playing some music and it starts a live activity that's for the playback. And when you swipe up, it flies into the dynamic island. And as far as I know, and of course, we'll have to see if something changes with the API now that dynamic island is a thing. Live activities are just like widgets in the sense that there isn't like a full interaction. You can basically have tappable zones, but no actual live interaction.
That's a very good point. Yeah, I missed the fact that it's based on live activities, but it makes a lot of sense, both from a kind of API perspective, but also like it also helps more teams kind of justify the investment of building out support for it, right?
Yeah.
Where there's so many developers out there, myself included, where every time you want to build a new feature, you have to convince someone that it's worth the time, right?
Yeah.
Either like a product manager or a customer or something. And having more devices being able to use the code, of course, that is a really great thing. And also for users being able to get those live activities on any device that can run iOS 16, not just the 14 Pro, I think that's great. But yeah, then I guess, you know, the way to think about it is not just so much a global action that you take in the app, but rather an action you can take when the app is not in the foreground, right? Like
yeah.
Something you want to be persisted on screen that you can still use. So if your game maybe lets you generate things in the background and then you can access them, maybe that's a way to access them with the dynamic island. But other than that, like, yeah, like you said, it's probably like the best kind of use cases are things that are ongoing in the background that you then want to be able to access at any time.
Yeah, and it's also used as an indicator of things happening. Like when you change between focus modes, it animates in and shows like the current focus mode, and you can tap and hold and disable it or change it. And it's also used for some types of notifications, like for AirDrop. If someone AirDrops you something while you're using your iPhone, currently, it's like a modal alert in the middle of the screen. It looks really ugly, and I think it looks way better that way. And I love what they've done where if you have two live activities happening at the same time, the second one kind of like bubbles out from within the first one and morphs into its icon, and then you can expand it. I think that looks really good, and it's a nice way to solve it. And I think for third-party apps, we'll definitely have to wait for the full API to be out, but I can definitely see myself using it for AirBuddy, because AirBuddy is going to be on iOS, like I've talked about. Been working on that for a while now, and I can see how like some of the notifications that you get from the app could be placed in there. And I'm pretty sure that live activities can be, I'm not sure if they can be activated from a push notification, but they can definitely be updated from a push notification. So that could be interesting. And in terms of me using it day to day, like a classic example that I think many people face now and every now and then is you call like a ride sharing app car and they send you 10 notifications like, oh, your driver is 10 miles away. Now they're closer. Now they're arriving. They sent you a message. They're looking for you. And each one of those status updates is a notification. And if in between two of those notifications, you want to get a status update, you have to go into the app and look at the UI and like wait for it to update and see how much time is left and what the license plates of the car is or whatever. And that being a live activity, you can just have it up there while you use your iPhone, which is probably what you'll be doing while you wait. You'll be like browsing Twitter or something or reading emails. So yeah, I think it solves a lot of problems that we have day to day and makes the experience a lot more smooth.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe I can then revise my file upload example from before and say instead it will be a file download, right? Like you can see the progress of the download in Dynamic Island. Like,
yeah,
you know, that could be cool as well.
Definitely.
So to wrap things up here on this episode, like there's of course many, many more things we could talk about, but could you just mention like what are some other features of the iPhone 14 Pro that you think are really exciting?
I mean, we didn't even talk about the always-on display. So that I would say that's my second favorite thing that they announced about the 14 Pro, because yeah, it's nice to have an always-on display, and I really like how they've done it in a different way than most other devices do, where you actually keep a hint of your wallpaper and they preserve skin tones if there's people in your wallpaper. And now the whole lock screen stuff makes a lot more sense when you think about it, why they did it and why it's so much more important now, because it's going to be seen a lot more if you leave your iPhone 14 Pro on a table or something. It's going to be always there unless you turn it off, of course. So yeah, I would say that was my second favorite thing. And we didn't get time to go into all of the photography stuff, which is also really exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the always-on display is probably going to take some while to get used to.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to hit that lock button, put your iPhone on the table, and look at it. Well, didn't I just lock the phone? Like, oh, right, there's an always-on display.
Yeah.
And the way they've done it is really impressive. Like, to your point, it looks like your lock screen, but it's there, always on. Like, it's not just, like, a black screen with some icons on it. It's actually the lock screen. It's just refreshing at a very low refresh rate.
Yeah, and if you have a live activity, it will show up in there as well. Also, another big change they made to the lock screen, which came in the late beta cycle of the iOS 16 beta, is the full screen. Well, not really full screen, but like filling up the whole lock screen, the album artwork for podcasts and music and things like that, that you can show in the middle of the lock screen instead of it taking up just the corner. And it also tints the whole lock screen based on the color of the artwork, and that's also visible during always on. So it makes a lot more sense now. Why would I want the album artwork to fill up the whole screen? Well, if you have your iPhone on top of a table and you just want to see what's currently playing, it's right there.
Yeah, exactly. Or you can use it as a fashion statement, right? You start playing some song just to make it look a certain way when you put your iPhone on the table.
Yeah, definitely.
Another thing that's really exciting for me is the new A16 chip. And it doesn't seem like maybe such a huge leap for the iPhone itself, but going to a 4-nanometer process, and I mean, the A series of chips are already so incredibly good that that's why it's maybe still at this point, like more incremental updates every year, which makes sense because it's once a year, right? And but it's just really, really exciting to see Apple like continuing to like move to smaller processes for their chips and the power efficiency that will bring and just what it could mean for future M series of chips. Just really, really exciting. So great to see like advances in Apple Silicon in general.
Yeah, and the 14 got the A15, but not the regular A15, the A15 with one more GPU core, which means the A15 that has no defects, basically.
Right, the non-broken A15s.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, that's absolutely not a problem at all. I think that's totally fine. And it's probably also good that they've done it because of supply chain stuff, so that they can guarantee that they'll have enough A16s. And we also don't know, like, we'll probably have an event in October or something, and there's probably going to be new iPads with the A16 or a variant thereof. So they're going to need those A16 chips. So it makes sense that the 14 didn't get them.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Rambo. So I think that's all of the products we were going to talk about today. But of course, there are many more things to discuss. And once there are public APIs for things like the Dynamic Island and things like that, definitely want to dive deeper into that and the actual use cases we can bring to life using those APIs. But for now, let's wrap things up here. So thanks so much for listening, everybody. And we will talk to you again on our next episode in September, which will come later in the month. So until then, say goodbye, Mr. Rambo.
Goodbye.